All right, well, yeah, I'm just going to open us in prayer, and then we're going to just sort of split it up. We're going to talk to someone on the foster end of things, and then Chris or Christ, apparently in the bulletin, and Rachel are going to talk about the adoptive end.
Oh, you have to sit here now.
So, but as we get started, let me just open us in prayer, commit the time to the Lord, and off we'll go. Well, Father, we thank you for your heart for those who are in need. We thank you that that heart reached down to us when we were hopelessly lost in our sin, when we were separated from you and your family, when we were without life and hope in this world. We thank you that you had mercy on us, and you sent your Son to atone for us so that you could adopt us as part of your family and to give us a home and a life and a future. And as we talk now, just a little bit of how we continue to carry that out, we just ask for your blessing, and we just pray that you would guide our discussion and make it fruitful for you and the kingdom of your Son. And we pray it in his name. Amen.
So when we were trying to prepare this, you know, Aaron does everything without notes. So
everything.
I'm like, can we write things? I don't work that way. I need to work this way, so... Aaron and I are going to start out talking about the foster care side, and then Rachel and Chris are going to talk about...
Rachel
are going to talk about the adoption side of things. And then we can take... we can take questions at the end of all of this, or we can always talk one-to-one. The foster discussion is... We're going to break it up into four parts. Why did we, as the Sussex, decide to become a foster family? Or you might hear it called a resource family. That's often what the caseworkers will call it. It's the same thing, a resource family. Challenges that we have, some practical next steps that anybody could do if you're interested, and then scripture truths that have helped us along the way. So, Aaron, you're going to do why we became a foster family.
Yeah. As you say, no, we've, we'll mention it along the way, but we've been doing it for 4 or 5 years. We had a couple kids out in Gettysburg, and then we came here and realized there was even bigger need here. We got back into the system and had four.
We've had four children kind of long-term, and then four others on shorter terms. So
really where it all started for me, going back to, you know, as a young adult, it was very much, it came out of the my passion, concern for the abortion issue, actually. Just seeing the injustice of that, and not being being overly cynical, I guess that my vote or my words were going to have any say or impact in that. I was looking for other more practical things to do, to be more proactively pro-life, and so this was something that I remember from very early on God laid on my own heart, and... Yeah, so that's kind of really where it all started for me. I will say that through that and just kind of ongoing later in life, maybe it's part of that whole cynicism too, in the whole political side of that, that I do have a conviction that the church needs to be a little bit more proactive in their pro-life stance, not so much just words and votes, you know, and stuff like that. So... I know the churches, we've talked a big game about pro-life, and we've lobbied behind, you know, politicians and things, and, you know, for that whole movement. But for me, it's really about putting money where the mouth is when it comes to how, you know, this pro-life concern. And if any of you were in my Sunday school class last week when we were talking about the ancient church, they were always very convicting to me, too. We were talking the other night... with Ed and Madeline, how it's interesting in the ancient church, you don't see them doing a lot of talking against the evils of the Roman Empire, which one of which was an extensive abortion system, prenatal and postnatal. But rather, they were very sacrificial in the way they lived in caring for the orphans and the unwanted children that were just randomly discarded all over the place because that was the thing that you could do back then. And if you ask me, like we talked last week, that was some of the stuff that changed the evil in the Roman Empire and really started to make a social difference. It wasn't their voices on the issue, or I don't even know if they had a vote, you know, back then or whatever. But So that's where kind of where it started for me. Can you hear me above the heater? Can you hear me in the back? All right, good. Other things that are of interest to me, I am a firm believer in, as families, I've become much more interested in experiential learning lately. And so, you know, we think of discipling our kids and growing them up in the understanding of who Christ is and what it means to serve his kingdom, right? We can talk about that. And, you know, we can pray about that with them, and we can have conversations over dinner, you know, or whatever, about those things. But I also think it's very helpful for families to also find ways that together you can serve the kingdom, and together you can learn of Christ while you are following him, right? Doing some of that very experiential learning. Hey, we're going to learn about Christ as we actually get off our butts, so to speak, and go and follow him in some of the, you know, ways that he's at work. And so for us, you know, just one of the greatest blessings that God has given to us as a family is our family and our home. And so we just thought, well, there would be a very practical way that together we could serve. We could just take that great gift of our home and our family and offer it to others and open it up to others. And I will say, since when we came back to Delaware County, and it was the girls that kept pushing us to get back into the foster system. We were talking about it casually, but Amy and I were just not necessarily jumping the gun to make it happen, but the girls kept...
Pray at dinner, can we please have foster children,
yes.
That kind of thing.
And so that... Yeah, couldn't get... So what are you going to do? So it has been a fun thing to do together as a family, and it gives very tangible ways that we can say, hey, you remember why we do this? And
although we were asking the girls in the car yesterday, why do we foster? And Kate was like, I don't know. I said, well, I guess we have some work. It's going to be a short Sunday school class.
That's just Kate. Please pray for Kate. Just in general. Let me see your notes. That's good. Oh, yeah. So
see, they're helpful.
Yeah, they are. Other reasons why we do it. One, because there's a massive need for it. Wasn't a huge need for it in Gettysburg when we did it. We did it there for a year, and then we never got a call again for, I don't know, a year and a half or so. So we just let our clearances kind of lapse. It wasn't a big need for it there. But since we've come back here, and you become aware of the statistics in this region, and there's a huge need for it. Delaware County, there's 300 kids in the system. In Philadelphia, there's 6,000, right? So just think about that. I mean, 6,000 kids who have been... just wrenched away from their families, and you think of...
That's just, all they know, however difficult it's been, that's what they know, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, like one of the boys that we had, you know, a teenage boy, and his mother treated him terribly. I mean, in the sense that...
You wouldn't think he'd be so attached to her, but
yeah,
he still was. Right?
And it was a huge emotional just upheaval for him, and so not only is it just that, hey, kids need a home, but they need... security, they need love. In many cases, they need to still be in their community so that they can go to their schools or whatever, so it gets tricky, but... What's that? Oh, yeah, sorry. Okay, so there's a big need for it. Definitely a big need, too, I think, for Christian families who understand that the impulse here is loving kids. It's not just opening a home, giving them a place to sleep at night, but it's actually loving them as one of their own kids. That's what they really need. So
there are a lot of... there could be a lot of families that do it with good motives, but then there are a lot that don't. And some of my work with, before we had Georgia and Jeffrey, I was supervising visits between birth mothers and their children who were in care. And so I got to see a little bit of a different side of things, but in that I was in some different foster homes, and some of them are really sad. It's literally dark and just sad places. So some people...
Let me just say the last thing, too, that with fostering, which may or may not... You might speak to this in relation on the adoptive end, but also in fostering, you get into it a little bit with... Because you go into it maybe to adopt, and that would be great if it does lead to adoption, but your mindset is also for the restoration of the family. So you're going into it wanting to love the kids, but also praying for the families, taking opportunities to love the family... you know, every other week I was going into the prison because I was a pastor and I could just walk right in and meet with the dad when we were out in Gettysburg and try to build a relationship there and share the gospel and minister. So,
and that dad is still in touch with Aaron, even though the boys are back in their places.
Right. So that's just the other thing I just wanted to mention, that foster care is not just a ministry to children, but you kind of go into it also, because you have that end goal of restoration, you view it partly as a ministry to the family as well. Like, we're providing this so that one day, by God's grace, this family will be restored. And, yeah. All right, you're up.
Okay. Okay.
Yes?
Yep. So I'm going to talk about some of the challenges that we find and that most likely you would find if you entered this world. And the first one, you can probably answer for me. What do you think I hear the most? It starts out like this. It's so wonderful that you do this, that you're providing this for these children. I could never do that because... Why? Why do you think? You couldn't give them back, right? I could never let them go back. And I mean, I understand that, and it's understandable. And so the difficulty is when they come into your home, our expectation is they are going to be going back to their birth family, and the reality is that situation is probably not going to be what they had in your home. Maybe it will be, but we just don't know. So you don't really know what you're sending them back to, and that is the biggest challenge, I think. And kind of alongside with that is, most likely, as a foster family, you won't see the long-term benefit of what you're kind of sacrificing for as long as they're in your home, right? Maybe you will. Maybe they'll get in touch with you someday and it'll be great, but maybe you won't. And
yeah, so we had an older boy that was with us, and when he left, we found out he was going back to his dad, who had been in prison for child abuse and things, and was going to be down in Maryland, out of the state. So it was like, ugh. And he kind of went off the grid. You know, some of the kids you can maybe trace on Facebook or whatever, see how they're doing, but he was offline and just had no idea, you know, for 3-4 years what became of him after we had him in our home for 8-9 months. But God
does. He was 11 when he was living with us.
Yeah. But then God does neat things. He just, about, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago, he gave me a call and...
Well, can I tell how it happened? He was driving by our house in New Oxford, and he was going to stop by and say hi to us, but we had moved. But we have a woman living there, and she had our contact information, so she gave it to Adam. So Adam called Aaron out of the blue a few months ago.
And he was very appreciative. I just want to call and let you know that I'm doing well. And he just wanted to say thank you. And then his dad got on the phone, who I had never even met, and just said, yeah, I just want to thank you for taking care of my son for, you know, those 8 months. And
and then I got on the phone and I was like, where'd you put my jewelry? Because I stole it. I'll get to that.
So.
Did you give it to your 5th grade girlfriend? I'm a little bitter about that. So. All right.
So it is an act of trust, because you don't know what God's going to do with these kids when they go. And
all right. Yeah, so, and I do kind of think sometimes, you know, when they go back, this year or whatever it is of nurture that we've given them, like, if they're neglected for 3 weeks, like, is that just kind of all going to be undone so quickly? It might be, right? So I guess what I'm saying that because... When people say, well, what you're giving them now is so helpful and beneficial, I agree with that, but I need a bigger reason to do that, okay? And so some of these reasons are the reasons that we're doing it, but it's more than just giving them now what they need, even though that's a huge part of it. So that's kind of one big challenge. The other big challenge is the system itself, and it's just pretty messy and doesn't work really well. Sometimes it does, but... I would say going into it, pretty much expect to feel taken advantage of and unappreciated, even though you know the children the most. People don't really care too much about your opinion. So, and there, I mean, there's valid reasons sometimes for that, because there are so many kids in care and the caseworkers are just totally overwhelmed. They're completely stretched thin and they just simply don't have the time to do what they need to do.
So if we ever were to talk to somebody who was considering it, we would make sure we tell them, hey, don't expect that you're going to get a lot from the system. Dennis, you should be telling this part of the story, right? Don't expect that the system's going to be coming and being your support and your lifeline. But let's pray together the church would be that. That as you step out here, that we can come alongside you as a church family and provide support and care and have people willing to babysit for, you know, a couple days over a weekend when you need to go away with the family or something.
Yes. So I did mention this, but one of my big frustrations is just knowing the most about the children and even about often their birth mother, knowing more than the caseworkers actually know. And then there's turnover in the caseworker. So the caseworker comes in, they're the one making the decision, and I'm the one saying, oh, well, actually, did you know this? And, you know, I'm filling them in on all that stuff. And so knowing that and then knowing that I really don't have a say in anything that happens is, it makes us feel weak, I guess. But again, we're not, I'll get to some other that later, but just trusting the Lord is going to be fighting those battles is what helps us. Okay. One thing that Aaron and I talk about is a challenge is just how it reveals the ugly stuff in our hearts while we're doing this. Like, man, sometimes I'm just pretty downright mean and impatient and bitter about some of these things. So it's not like, it's not this wonderful, oh, we're martyr pictures. It's like, no, this is, we see our sins a lot in what we're doing. You have a lot to share about this, don't you?
Well, I certainly could. When we had that 11, 12-year-old boy, one, we had not had older children yet.
So Callie was 5 at the time.
Yeah, we hadn't had boys, you know, approaching that teenage age. And we certainly didn't have people that had emotional distress and things. And so, yeah, I was not prepared, and, man, I was not patient. And I just pray now that we did not do more harm to that poor boy than he had coming in. So the fact that he called and said, I'm doing all right, was like a big
thing. We were like, oh, good. He's okay.
We didn't mess him up totally. But, that set me back a little bit. I was not too eager to get right back in it because I wasn't sure that I was spiritually in a right place to
I kind of think we felt like, Lord, we were trying to do this because we thought you wanted us to do this, but like, where were you? It didn't feel like you were helping us very much. I mean, I'm sure he was there, but that's just how it felt.
It's tough.
So, I'll go keep going for the sake of time, but I do have an example from my own tradition.
You should.
Okay. Just this past week, like, I'm still kind of irritated at Georgia. She's 2. It doesn't make any sense. But I had to pick up Georgia and Jeffrey from their visit with their mom. And I hadn't had this direct face-to-face with their mom for probably 6 months or so. Usually we have an in-between person that picks the kids up at my house and takes them to the visit and brings them home, so I don't interact with the mom. And I don't have the awkward, hi, Georgia and Jeffrey, now I'm going to take you with me and see how that all plays out. Like, are they going to cry? So here's what I thought was going to happen. I was going to enter the room where they were visiting, and Jeffrey was going to start scooting over to me, you know, with his arms up like he does. And Georgia was going to be like, Mommy! And I was going to have to say to Lindsay, I know, I'm sorry, she does call me Mommy, but she hears the girls call me Mommy all the time, and I hope that's okay. That's what I thought was going to happen. It didn't happen. I walked into the room, they just kept playing. And I sat down and talked to their mom, which was a nice conversation, and eventually I said, okay, Georgia, you got to put your coat on, we're going to go. And so Lindsay starts putting her coat on for her and zipping her up. And Georgia was like this, no, I won't go with you. To me! And in front of the caseworker, too. And I was like, oh, Georgia, are you kidding me? And in my mind, I'm like, everything I've done for you this year? And you are going to say that at this moment, you know? I mean, she went to McDonald's and got toys at Walmart. I mean, I get it. She doesn't really, I think she loves me, but anyway. So still, I'm like, Georgia, I don't know. I'm trying
some,
to get over
I
that.
I could sense some passive aggression towards Georgia when I came home. A little bit.
Okay. And then the last thing is we just have less time for our own girls. I had been pretty involved in their school, and now I'm kind of just at home with Georgia and Jeffrey, so my world is a little bit more isolated, and I do feel that lack for the girls. They don't seem to mind it, but it's the reality of it. Like, there's just... There's just less of us to go around. So even bedtimes, you know, we used to have decent tucking in times. Now, like, good night, I'm done, you know. So things like that.
Even being available to the church in a lot of ways, like we're not available in other church ministries and type things that maybe we were before.
So you can talk about just quickly some practical steps, I guess.
You're going to do this?
After, at the end.
Oh. Well, okay, so yeah. practically speaking, if you have any interest in this sort of thing, I want to say, first of all, that the need is not just for full-on foster parents, right? There's all sorts of different levels of this. You can be a foster parent. You can be a respite parent, which is just you get cleared in the system. And then when foster parents, you know, go away or whatever, and they need a respite, you're there, and you would have kids for maybe a week, and that's it until the other family comes back. We've done that for two or three kids, so that you can do that. There's also a new thing out with like Bethany Children's Services is doing this, where it's like a refuge program for mothers who are at risk for potentially losing their kids. You can come alongside as maybe a support, a help, and even in some cases, I think maybe even open up your home so they can come live with you, have a place to stay, so that the state doesn't come in and take the child because they don't have a place to stay. So that's another thing that could be involved.
I think that idea is probably the best one and probably the hardest one. I mean, I can't really imagine having the kid's mom in the house with us and just all the dynamics that would be. But I know that would probably be the best thing if we could do that. I don't know.
And there is a Bible Fellowship church up in Harrisburg that has started trying to do that too, to jump the system in a sense. See families at risk and boom, get around that family and try to build that family up before the state comes in and pulls the kid. It's pretty neat to see what's going on there.
But another thing, if you're interested and you don't feel like you could have children in your home, a huge, huge need really is for these mothers who have children in care to have somebody mentor and just help them. A lot of them don't have family support. And from my previous job, I know the challenges that they have to overcome. I mean, I have a lot of resources, and it would be almost impossible for me, I feel like, to do what they have to do in the amount of time they have to do it, find a job, find a decent place to live, attend their parenting classes, attend their drug rehab classes, usually all of this without a vehicle, so they're relying on public transportation. And also, one quick thing is, a lot of these mothers have not been nurtured themselves. Like, they haven't had a mother, so they don't know how to be a good mother. So if you want to, I could connect you with mothers. It would take some time, but there I know so many mothers out there whose children are in care and who would really benefit from just somebody coming alongside of them and letting them eat dinner with you and seeing how your family is a family would mean a lot to them. One woman that I worked with, she would visit with her son, and the only song she would sing to them was Happy Birthday, because that's like the only kid's song that she knew. So that kind of thing, you know, they just haven't had a mom.
You might remember Patty last summer. She was living with us for a little while in this sort of situation, but we had hoped that would help her get back on her feet with her kids. Didn't quite work out, though.
Well, she eventually did, but just took longer.
That was fun. Had a couple fun run-ins with the police here.
Yep.
She was hanging out of her car and half intoxicated in the parking lot. The last thing I would say, too, is so even if you can't, you know, if you're not interested in all of that or whatever, just being the church for, you know, families or people that are doing foster care, like Tom and Suzanne are getting into the system. And, you know, so even I can't stress how, like, the church family really needs to be the system, not so much the state. So everything from praying, or Chip and Nicole took Georgia and Jeffrey for...
The box.
What's that? Oh, yeah, in the box. Are they here?
Steve.
Oh, yeah, Steve's over here. Yeah, in the box. They took Georgia and Jeffrey for a couple days so we as a family could go up to Maine. And that
and
was such
have
a huge
your
blessing.
To do that. Yeah, that was a big blessing.
So just being a part of a church family and the church being the church is huge.
And just, you know, even with Georgia and Jeffrey here, like, seeing the church love them, like, they're covered with the name and the mercy of Christ now, you know? And I know that whatever happens, they're going to be, people will be praying for them, and they've come into contact with that, the church.
I will let you know, too, in case you don't know, they do give you a stipend, which more than covers the financial needs that you incur with that. So if you're
worried about finance. For Delaware County, for each child, you get $20 a day. So it's not like you're going to get rich, but you have... Yeah.
I think it's a little... Is it more
for
Philadelphia?
For Philadelphia County, you get maybe like 28 or 30 a day. But you just keep in mind, if the child is from Philadelphia County, you're going to be driving to Philadelphia for their visits. It's just a lot more.
So practical next steps, if you would want to take this further, the first thing we recommend is actually sit down and talk with us or somebody else who's worked. Talk to Dennis and Lois, who've done. How many kids have you guys had?
We've had 13 children come through our home.
And how many of them do you wind up adopting?
Two.
Right.
The last two we adopted.
So, yeah, get familiar. Talk to people who are doing it. That would be good. Or I had a great conversation with Abby's dad, Joe, prior to coming in here. He would be a great one to hear from the experience of the foster child and how he was saying growing up really not knowing himself and not knowing where home was or whatever. So really interesting things.
Yeah, like shame for being in the system.
Yeah, shame. If you... In Delaware County, you can just call up, I think Mark Bickle put a resource packet together. There's the contact information there for the Delaware County Children and Youth if you want to call her and get a resource. Or you can do what we do. We go through New Foundations in Swarthmore, which enables us to be resource for Delaware County and Philadelphia. So we could go either way.
You remember Celeste? She was from Philadelphia County.
Yeah.
Cutie.
Bethany Children's Services does that as well, too. Bethany has some neat foster refugee programs, too, if you'd be interested more on that end of things. So all those are listed on that resource sheet. Just look them up.
If you're interested, probably the best thing to do would just be to sit down and talk to families who have sort of done this and can give you, I don't know, just a little bit of... some of our experiences with different agencies and things like that. So, I just wanted to end with some of the scriptures that have helped us through some of these things, and I'll take you back to the first night that Jeffrey was came to our house, October 1st, last year, and he was a little 5-pound Jeffrey, and it was the middle of the night, and I was feeding him, getting back into that, okay, this is what it's like to have a newborn again. And this particular night, it was the first night, and I was reading in Isaiah. And I will say that during many subsequent feedings, I was watching Netflix, not reading scripture. But this night, I was reading scripture. And it was the idea that Isaiah 45:9, "Woe to him who strives with him who formed him, a pot among earthen pots. Does the clay say to him who forms it, 'What are you making?' Or, 'Your work has no handles.'" And just within that first night, realizing that, okay, this child belongs to the Lord. It's the one that the Lord made. And whatever happens in this next, I don't know how long it's going to be, but I don't have the right to tell God what to do with his creatures. So that is something that is just kind of constantly running in the back of my mind throughout all these different things. At the same time, I say that, but I also say, as we've been going through Psalms and learning to pray in God's character, I do pretty boldly tell God what I think would be best and what I want, and I say, "Lord, you're the God of mercy, and you love these children, and so you want them to be nurtured, so please put them in a home where they will be." You know. So another thing that I've learned along the way has been really important is just that their mother is not my enemy, but that's really difficult to remember, especially because in my head I'm constantly sort of making a case against her and why she shouldn't be able to care for these two that I love, you know? When Jeffrey was in the hospital for a week back in June or July, one of us was there, you know, for 5-6 days, nights, and his mom wasn't able to get there until the last night. And I just kind of got sick to my stomach when I found out she was coming, because I thought, oh, it took you 5 days to get here, And now the last night, and the problem was, that was the last night, he wasn't able to be discharged until he had a 12-hour fast. So for a, how old was he? 8-month-old? I mean, it was just going to be a long night, potentially. Because also during that night, he was going to get pricked to get his blood sugar checked every couple hours. So I just thought, okay, so now we're both going to be sleeping in this hospital room together. It's kind of an awkward situation, right? He's going to cry. He's going to want me to hold him because he knows me. But I'm going to try to be sensitive to her as his mother. And I just was crying before I was driving to the hospital, like, Lord, please help me. I do not want to do this. And I just have to say, God really met me and was so good. I had talked to the nurses on the floor, and I said, this is what's going to happen, and it's just going to be a kind of an awkward situation. And she gave me, like, Jeffrey's room was on the end of the hallway at DuPont, and next to it was this beautiful lounge with, like, all glass windows. And if you've been to DuPont, you know that view is beautiful. And I could lock it. They brought a cot in for me, right? And I just had, like, such good time with the Lord, but I could hear when Jeffrey cried. So when he cried, I could just go right over there, but I didn't have to sleep in the same room as his mom. And but during that time with the Lord, he just so reminded me that she's not my enemy and that he was the one that was going to fight the battles for us and for the kids, right? So when I submit to that and trust that the Lord is going to fight, because you know I want to, you know it rises in me to, like, to tell everybody what's wrong with their mom and why maybe she shouldn't be able to do this. It's not because I don't want to support her, but it's because I love the kids and I don't want them to go back to something that's not ideal, right? But remembering that he's fighting, he redefines the enemy. It's not their mom. It's the evil, it's the darkness, it's the brokenness, the sin that's the enemy. And then I'm finally free to love her. Because I don't have to fight, right? I don't have to be the one fighting the battle. So, the Lord, Exodus 14:14. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. Keep remembering that. And then, we keep telling ourselves, fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Luke 12, I think. So whatever happens, and I expect there to be some upcoming grief with Georgia and Jeffrey, but I keep saying, okay, Lord, but you promised to give us the kingdom, so.
And can I just read Philippians 2?
Well, can I, before you one more thing. Yeah. That comment about, I could never be a foster parent because I could never give them back. I just want to say about that, you know, like I said, I'm expecting this to hurt a lot in the next few months. but the way I want to frame it to you is that Georgia and Jeffrey and any of these children who are in care did not, don't cry, you
I'm
can't
sorry,
do that.
I'm sorry. That's why I looked away from you. I was like,
what kind of deal? They didn't ask to be born into this situation, right? That's going to be bad. It's not going to be the kind of home that I would want to grow up in, probably, or I want my girls to grow up in. And they were born, and they didn't have a choice. None of these children who are in care had a choice to be born in this family. So what I want you to think about is, with Georgia and Jeffrey, we've entered into their story. And in a way, we've entered into their suffering, because now we know them. And we're going to hurt with them. When they go back to their mom, if they do, we're going to hurt with them. So I guess you can give them back. You can, because Christ will enable you to share in that suffering with them, and you'll share it with Christ. Now, I also am saying this, and in 3 months, you are allowed to tell me this when I'm at church, really angry, okay? Because I might be, so.
Yeah, so, and I just would add to that, that it is participation not only in their suffering, but also in the sufferings of Christ, where Paul says, indeed, I count everything as loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ, my Lord. So for his sake, I've suffered the loss of all things, and I count them as rubbish in order that I may gain Christ and be found in him, that I may know him and the power of his resurrection and may share in his sufferings, becoming even like him in death, that by any means possible I may attain the resurrection from the dead. So again, it's that experiential learning thing. Christ served. It wasn't all roses. It led him to a cross, and a service often does that. But the cool thing for Paul is he says that as I go to that cross, I'm knowing Christ in that, and I'm experiencing the resurrection power of Christ, and that overwhelms any suffering, hopefully.
So, and then Rachel, if we ever adopt any children through foster care, I want to do it the way that these guys do it, because they really have such a good relationship with the birth mother of their kids, and she can talk about that, but...
Okay, so we are Rachel and Chris Kessler, contrary to what Christ says in the bulletin. We have a 5-year-old daughter. Her name is Cece. Currently, she has a huge bandage on her ear because it's been a crazy week. That'll play into what I'm talking about. I'm crying and I didn't even talk. I am incredibly blessed to have married into a family that adores adoption. My husband's family is the Kesslers, the older. They've got 3 adopted. Nobody in my family is adopted. I have 6 siblings. None of them have adoption in there. So for my world, it was a little bit of a shaking. And that I can tell you another time. But I wanted to really start off by saying something that it didn't inherently bother me, but children of adoption and foster care are never unloved at any time. They are, in fact, loved by so many people. And that's something that with our daughter, we have an open adoption with her biological mother. I'm not going to be able to do it. I was going to try to do it without saying her real name, but I'm going to have to say it. Her name is Mama Terry, and that's what we call her in our house. So that's the background. What led us to adoption is I cannot have children. I found out at 18. At 18, you don't really care about it. But when you are 20 and another gentleman breaks up with you because he finds out you can't have children, that's gut-wrenching, and then you meet an amazing man that God brings into your life who basically, our first date, I was like, I can't have kids. We were like 20 and 19. I was like, I can't have kids, and he's like, that's fine. what I wanted to do is going to kind of follow a little bit of a similar pattern to what Amy said, but then I wanted to talk about a few things. I wanted to give you guys some terms about adoption. I think when I think about this topic of loving, I think one of the best things that we can do is we can support people in foster care and adoption by using the correct language to speak with them to show respect. The big thing, and these are all things that have been said to me in one shape or another. Someone asked me if my daughter was given up. Instead of in the adoption and even the foster care world, children are never given up. Children are placed. When you give up something, you give up material things. You give them up. When you place something, that thing has value and purpose. You don't throw things that you give away, things that you just don't care about, but you place things. So that's a really big thing. When we talk about our daughter, she was never given up. She was placed with us. When a woman is pregnant and she is considering adoption, and this is language that actually changed while we were in our process, they used to be a mother was always called a birth mother, but they changed the language. So if a woman is pregnant and considering adoption, she's called an expectant parent, and that includes the dads as well. And when she gives birth, she then takes on the role of birth mother. So those are things that we use in our house. We use the term birth mother, biological mom. We use all of those things. Those are like some big topics that'll help you. The next thing I'm going to get into is some really uncomfortable questions that I've been asked. And again, this is ways that you can show love to families that have adopted children by never repeating any of these questions. So one of the big things there's 2 questions and they're connected. More often than not, when people find out she's adopted, they can't wrap their head around it. And they'll go, well, is she your real daughter? And I want to be like, she is very real at 2 a.m. when she needs to be fed, people. But no, she is very real. She is a human. Asking this is basically saying that she isn't a real human, and it isn't logical. A statement like this we say because we can't comprehend the love that has occurred. The next question that I get is twofold. I get, do you know who her real mom is, or where is her real mom? And this one I like to do, and I go, well, folks, that's me. I am her real mom. The term real in adoption is really an odd word. real. Everybody is real. Her biological mother is very real as her mother. I am her mother. I am very real as her mother. So I will tell you a little bit. Cece's birth mother is very much alive, and we do have an open adoption. She is part of our story even now. Cece knows about her. Cece talks about her. This week when she got a growth on the back of her ear on Monday, it's been a really weird week for us. But the first thing that I was able to do was I actually messaged her mom and I said, hey, Cece has a lump on the back of her ear. She has some other siblings. Do any of your other children have that lump? And she was able to tell me, oh, hey, by the way, one of my kids also has this lump. So her mother is very much her mom. She gave her the biology. So that's that. Another great, terrible question I get, and I'm like cringing a little to even say this. How much did your child cost? Seriously? I have been asked that question so many times, I understand what people are trying to get at. But the best way to ask that is by never asking. So people that do ask that to me, I generally tell them that our daughter was free. We do not support human trafficking of any kind. Our daughter was free. There was just a little bit of shipping and handling to get her here. But the truth is that we did a private adoption. And the truth is that it is a very expensive undertaking, and it was not something that we took very lightly. We saved for many years. And I always ask people, if you want to understand the financial burdens, we can have coffee sometime. But that's not a question to ever ask anyone. So if I see any of you in this church ever ask someone that, I will just slap you. It's just blanket. I'm just going to slap you. It's okay. So those are some questions that I've gotten through the years. I've had some really awesome interactions with people. When she first came, I don't know why, we were down at the beach. Oh, we were on the middle school beach trip. Oh, golly. And I was walking around with her, and she's like a little, like, two-month-old. And the thing that, because she is Caucasian and God has made her to look like Chris and I, it's amazing. I met this woman named Edna. We're standing in the food court, and she's like, you look amazing for only having a kid 2 months ago. And I was like, oh, well, I said, she's actually adopted. And clear across, so everybody knows, and down in Ocean City, there's a, like, big food court. Clear across the thing, she's like, Deborah, this baby's adopted. It was terrible. But this woman came up to us, and she's similar to that. Oh my goodness, I cannot believe this child's adopted. Oh my goodness, it was very uncomfortable. So things to not yell across the room is, please don't yell, this child's adopted to us. I also use humor when I'm really uncomfortable, so that's why you all are laughing. Because I'm not uncomfortable to talk about this, I just hate talking to people. And my husband doesn't always speak, so he's just good looking. Some really, really difficult parts of adopting. We waited 3 years for Cece. We made a book for her when she came to us after her first year. I made a book of our journey to her. So I wrote down everything that happened. I wrote down a little bit of Chris and I's, like, when we were dating, where adoption played into it, meaning our first date. We had a conversation that adoption was the way we were growing our family. Up until, like, the week before she came, we were on vacation. So everything so that she knows all of this, and that I could remember what we went through. But we waited 3 years, and then we had 18 hours to get ready. So we waited and we waited. The summer before Cece came, I was really questioning God. Why were we waiting so long? The way our adoption process goes, similar to a dating profile, we make a profile of our family, and then we are picked by a birth mother or birth parents. And we had, at that point in time, probably been turned over 10 to 15 times in the 3 years. It's hard to sit there when you're passed over thinking, am I not good enough? Why, God, aren't you doing this to me? Like, for me, we're good people. We go to church. We're doing your work. But why aren't you giving this thing in my life? And I can sit back now and see that God is preparing us for Cece and the journey that we were going to take with her biological mom. And I'll get into that a little bit lower. Okay, cool. So another huge difficult part of adoption is the finances. We did not feel God's calling to adopt through foster care because, unfortunately, in this region, there are not a lot of children. We wanted to have a baby first because we wanted to figure out how to parent. There are not a lot of children that are in foster care that are legally allowed to be adopted at the time. So that's where we felt called. And we actually started for our second adoption. And we are again, due to kind of the age brackets and things, we are doing another private adoption again, but we're excited. We'll take any child under the age of Cece, so she is 5. She's born on July 31st, 2014. Anybody born after that, you can come into our house. There's so much to adoption and little nuances, but I wanted to touch, I'm sorry, I'm like, just going really fast. One of the things that I wanted to touch on in the adoption world, there's 3 types of adoption, really. Open adoption, semi-open, and closed adoption. And I wanted to talk about, we have an open adoption, and I wanted to talk about that because I wanted to talk, when we were looking at the topic of love, I know that my daughter is loved. She's loved by everybody. She's loved by a biological mom. When I think about love, I think about these birth mothers and birth dads. They need love as well. Open adoption is just that. Cece came to us, we got an email that had kind of all this information about her, and one of the things was that her biological mother wanted to have contact with us. When we first started our adoption journey, I was like, God, I can never do open adoption. I can't do it. There's no way, and I'm going to use terms that I hate, there's no way I could share my kid. There's no way I could do this. I can't. Through the years of, we had to take some training to become a foster parent, which I would heavily recommend anybody that's pregnant, take some sort of training. It's so good. One of the things that they did at one of our training is they did an analogy with puzzles. There was like 6 or 7 tables out at one of these trainings, and each table got a different puzzle. One of the tables got a box, with a picture on it, and the puzzle pieces weren't all there. One had a box that the puzzle pieces weren't from the same puzzle, so the picture on the box and the puzzle pieces, they weren't right. Another person, their box, they had a picture, but they had no puzzle pieces, and then there was another box that just had one puzzle piece missing. This is when God broke my heart. What they said was, when children are adopted and they do not have the biological pieces of their puzzle, they sometimes attempt to make up their puzzle. The story that they told was, we adopted through Bethany Christian Services, and one of the stories that they'll tell is that they had a child that was placed for adoption, and she was dead set that her mom was an Olympic gymnast. I'm serious. Her mom's an Olympic gymnast, and that's why she couldn't have her. That's why she placed her. And in that moment, I remember God going, you can do this. And when it came time to kind of explain what kind of openness we wanted, I felt very, very convicted, and we agreed that we could have an open adoption. What does open adoption look like for us? I brought a picture, I'll send this around, or I can leave it up here. This is a family picture for us. There's a nice little piece of white tape there. That's Cece's biological mother. We're just respecting her privacy. These pictures are up in my home, and if you come to my home, you can gladly see it without the white. This is Cece's biological mom. This photo was taken 2 years ago at our daughter's dance recital. From the first day that Cece came home, I emailed with her biological mother. I will tell you, I do not use the term biological mother when I'm speaking about her. She's just her mom. She is just this other woman in Cece's life that loves and adores her. I never want her to not have another person that loves her. So for us, open adoption looks like emails. It looks like photos that I send to her. I'm mandated by the state of Pennsylvania to send 8 photos 4 times a year till she turns 18. Those are the ones I don't care about. I'm like, oh, come on, let's just get these photos. But what I do care about is the messages that I'm able to send to her. It's called a PACA, and it's a post-adoption covenant agreement. Part of that post-adoption covenant agreement is the agreeance that we will continue to have her biological mother, Terry, in our lives. So the big thing that I love about open adoption, so Cece sees her biological mother. Right now she sees her about once a year. She will tell you about her biological mother, and she can also tell you she has two step siblings. And she will tell you it through our social worker for a loop, because we were going through our neck, it doesn't matter. She has two other siblings that she can tell you about. She can tell you their names sometimes, but she can tell you that she has a half-sister, and I look just like her. And we very much relish that. Now, Cece's half-siblings don't know that she exists, which is why this tape is here, because we know that they're outside of our circle. There are not many people that know about Cece in her biological mother's circle because of the choices that she's made. But one of the things that I see with open adoption is that we are able to bring Christ into Cece's birth mother's life. And through her birth mother's choices of love, we are able to continue to show her Christ, because her placing her child for adoption this is just Christ all over it. So I will send this picture around as you guys look at it, and I want you guys to notice something. So Cece's wrapped up in a pink scarf. It was really awkwardly cold. It was a June day, and it was really awkwardly cold. This was the first time that Cece's biological mom had seen her in 3 years. The last time she had seen her, Cece was 10 days old, and we just so happened to be at the adoption agency at the same time, which doesn't usually happen. They don't like it to happen, that her mother was terminating her rights that day. We were in signing paperwork, and her mother had come in to sign paperwork to officially say, I'm terminating my parental rights. And I remember our social worker got a phone call, and she looked very uncomfortable. And she was like, Terry is here to sign her termination paperwork. How would you feel about her seeing you? So this is where the fear that Amy was talking about. So fear does grip you in that moment. So I know this bubbly 10-day-old child who is adorable. I know what joy she's brought our lives. So now before she terminates her rights, I'm going to let her hold her. And in that moment, I can literally say that in that moment, words leapt out of my mouth, and I didn't say them. The words, of course, came out of my mouth. And I'm like, who just said that? There's no way that word, I just said that. And my social worker's like, okay, let's do this. So for 45 minutes before she signed her rights, terminating her parental rights, she held Cece. And it was a gift from God, because from then on out, I did not need to worry. In Pennsylvania, there's 30 days after a parent terminates their rights, they have 30 days to take their rights back. So for 30 days, you could sit and wonder, or God could grant you an amazing gift. I knew that after that 45 minutes of her holding her, she did not feel like she was going to take her rights back. And after that 45 minutes, our social worker was like, I think it's time to go now. She just goes like this. She places her in my arms, says goodbye, and walks out. And that was a gift from God that I don't think anybody could have planned or even told me was going to happen. That God was going to give me a guarantee right then and there that I could quiet my heart. Now, I will tell you, for the next 30 days, I did struggle, because at any moment you're like, oh, who's going to call? And we did, during that time, we did have a couple hiccups. And there was a gentleman that came forward that needed to terminate some rights. And that happened, and that was very scary to get a call from the adoption agency saying that there's a gentleman here. And he's a little bit more complex, but there's a gentleman here that does have legal rights to the child. And she's like, well, and our social worker's like, we'll see what happens. But he walked in, asked if the child was being loved, and signed his rights and went out. So that's my little ranting. So I know that I've given you like a lot of pieces of my story. My dad convinced me to write my story out for the BFC magazine. And I just so happened to carry copies. I don't carry them. I like got copies. Back to this. Thanks. Can I have that? Thanks. So now that you've all gotten to look at this picture, I want you all to notice the placement of Terry and I's hands. I hope that you guys did. There are two hands surrounding that little girl. I do not get scared by this woman being in our lives. She had came to CC's Dance Recital last year, so this seems to be our thing now. We're going to do dance recitals together. I am not scared when I have her in my life. I am not scared when she messages me. I am not scared when she sees our daughter, because I know my place in our daughter's life. And there may come times that Cece questions what is going on in her life. Why do I have two moms and other people don't? Why do I only get to see her once a year? She's going to question those things, but I can only hope that our continued to talking about her and our continued her presence in our life will show her that. So if you have questions about adoption, practical things, come have lunch with us, have dinner with us. If you would like, I always encourage people, if you would like to talk to Cece about her adoption, she will talk to you. I just ask that you have Chris or I there with you, because she may not speak to you otherwise. But I asked her today, I said, what?
She'll growl.
She'll growl at you. And that's a term of endearment, don't worry. But if you are thinking about adopting, or you feel like that's what God's calling you to, please come talk to us. I'm a pretty open book with my journey and the struggles that we faced. So I did want to leave you, similar to Amy, and then we'll go, with some verses. So during that 3-year wait, I really questioned God and why we were doing this. So there were 3 verses that I kind of leaned towards. The first one was a verse that I learned when I was working at a summer camp. James 1:2-4, consider it pure joy, my brothers, when you face trials of many kinds, because you know the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. This verse rang very, very true in the timing of Cece's adoption. 1 week before she came to us, we were on a cross-country road trip with his family, and I was ready to give up adoption. When we got back, that was my goal. When we got back, I was stopping the adoption process. I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't be passed over again. I couldn't do it. And I was taking that time on that vacation to spend time with God and really pray, is this just what I'm feeling or what I'm supposed to do? And that verse rung so true, because literally, so we got back on a Sunday, and it was a Tuesday that we got a call that we had been picked. Thursday, we met Cece's biological mother, and that Thursday evening, about 8:54 p.m., we got the call from the social worker, what are you doing tomorrow, because you have a child at 2 p.m. So that verse is just so rings true. So the other one I wanted to share was out of Psalms 27:13-14. I believe that I shall look upon the goodness of God in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord, be strong, and let your heart take courage. Wait for the Lord. So, I am an open book. If you have a question about adoption that's a little bit more like personal, you can feel free to come to me personally, like I said. So I guess we can say, if you guys have any questions about anything that was said, go ahead and ask questions. Great. I'm so glad you guys know everything. If you are thinking about adopting, if you would like to tell me, I would like to be praying for you. The more people you have praying for you, the better it'll be. So, we're on time. All right. We have to say, you are dismissed.
Good job, Chris.
She said, I'm just the pretty one here today.
Oh, you're going to take that to heart today.
Today, yeah.
Today, yeah. Next week, not so much.